I mean what I say. I got a lot to do. But I'm going to find ample time to help, and I can help raising money. And if he wants my pretty face standing by his side at one of these rallies, I'll be glad to show up.
Man or Monkey endorsed John McCain today with a little soft shoe thrown in for good measure. So, yes, yes, we have moron sounds for you tonight. Good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you stick around for a while. Is the Los Angeles audience with us tonight? Let me take a look at the hockey schedule here. What is this? This is the 5th? It is? They're with it. Hello, Los Angeles. Hello, Dallas. Hello, San Francisco. Hello, Seattle. Hello, Portland. Hello, Minneapolis. Hello, Madison. Hello, Miami, and so on and so on. Dennis Kucinich got through his primary. There were four or five people running against him. And the one who was positioned to beat him is a Cleveland City Councilman, Joe Kimperman. I believe that's how you pronounce it. It's C-I-M-P-E-R-M-A-N, Kimperman. Now, there's a newspaper. Well, it's not really a newspaper. It's a news agency called the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. It's an international news agency that serves Jewish community newspapers and media around the world. It was founded in 1917 by Jacob Landau as the Jewish Correspondence Bureau with the mandate of collecting and disseminating news among and affecting Jewish communities of the diaspora as well as Israel. They're headquartered in New York City. You'll understand why I'm giving this info in a minute. They're headquartered in New York City. They have correspondents in D.C., Jerusalem, Moscow, and 30 other cities in North and South America, Israel, Europe, Africa, and Australia. It is a not-for-profit corporation. It claims no allegiance to any specific branch of Judaism or political viewpoint. Now, the reason I give you all that is because what I'm about to share with you comes from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. Here's what they say. Today, U.S. Representative Dennis Kucinich beat a challenger to his House seat who was financed in part by pro-Israel donors. Kucinich, a two-time failed presidential candidate, was challenged in the Democratic primary by a Cleveland City Councilman, Joe Kimperman, who raised $500,000, much of it from pro-Israel donors furious with Kucinich for his harsh criticism of Israeli policies in the West Bank and the 2006 Second Lebanon War. The Democratic primary challenge was serious enough that Kucinich dropped his perennial quixotic presidential bid in January to campaign for his seat. He ended up raising $689,000 and last night handily defeated Kimperman. Perennial quixotic? But this is his second time. But anyway, so the Jewish Telegraphic Agency puts it out there for you. The Jewish donors tried to do to Dennis what they did to our representative here before she was defeated. Cynthia McKinney. That was such a sordid story here. I mean, she was labeled. I had friends tell me, Cynthia McKinney, she's an anti-Semite. I hate that. Her dad is the anti-Semite. Billy McKinney is a Jew hater of the highest order. but Cynthia, no. I've known Cynthia for 20 years, maybe more. She is not. She's a little quixotic, but certainly not what she was accused of being. Do you have you been giving your kids or family members Tamiflu or Relenza? Bad news for you, truth seekers. Roche Holding and GlaxoSmithKline, the two companies that make these drugs, said yesterday that they had added new labels to the prescription flu medicines. And the labels contain reports of abnormal psychiatric behavior in some patients. A warning about cases of delirium and unusual behavior had been listed previously on Tamiflu. That language was strengthened and updated to say that some cases were fatal. Holy jumping, Jehoshaphat. Roche's letter, dated February 2008, advises doctors of post-approval reports, after they got their approval to market this garbage, of patients who took Tamiflu and experienced behavior, quote, leading to injury and in some cases resulting in, I love this, fatal outcomes. A fatal outcome? Why not just say death? We're having dinner tonight, Kathy and Molly and I, and we had some flowers on the table. That a big bouquet that was sent to us when I got back from Phoenix by our friends at KPHX in Phoenix. It was very nice. And the flowers, it was a beautiful bouquet. And you know how you get a bouquet and some of the flowers die earlier and some of them keep going for a while, remain in bloom. So the huge bouquet that KPHX sent to us was down to about seven flowers. And they were on the our little... in our breakfast nook, the little table there. And Molly and Kathy and I were sitting there having dinner tonight, and Molly said, what happened to all the flowers? And I said, well, they've died. You know, those are the ones that are left. And she said, they're dead? I said, yeah, like the bunny we saw on the path the other day. When I don't know why I'm laughing. When we were riding bikes, remember?
Don't even get me started on the dead bunny on the side of the road.
I know. And Molly said, oh... I said, you know, like the bird. Remember when we buried the bird underneath the tree? Oh, and then she said, and all of you parents have had this moment, and then she said, well, I won't die, will I? And, we said, well, not for a very, very long time, Molly, 1,000 years. Not, you know, but I'll die too. Well, way, way, way in the future, when you get old, and I almost said like daddy, and I thought, no, don't say that.
You don't forget the punchline.
And you give it.
Well, then Molly does what Molly has been doing lately, which is start to make up a song about whatever we're talking about. Yeah, the last tragic song that I heard out of her mouth until tonight was, I don't have any friends. I wish I had friends. So tonight at the dinner table, we're treated to, I can't even do, I'm going to die someday. I'm going to die someday. I thought, oh, great. She's going to go to preschool tomorrow, walk in, and they're going to think, God, this kid lives with the Addams Family. She's going to walk in. I'm going to die. I'm going to get a call. They're going to ask me if she has a disease. I know it's coming.
No. Just blame.
I know it's coming.
And all you have to say is, well, we did give her a dose of Tamiflu.
No, and then they'll say, and then Molly will start in on the dead bunny that
right.
You pointed out to her on
and
her
the
bike
dead
path
flowers.
The other day. You
and
know,
the
daddy shows me all the dead stuff, says, I'm going to die too. That's what my daddy says. My daddy says, everything dies, I'm going to die too, along with the flowers and the bunny.
Well.
It's like living with Rick Santorum.
No, she came to that conclusion herself. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Some cases resulting in fatal outcomes. That's, you know, why doesn't Roche just put on their label possible injury and in some cases death? GlaxoSmithKline, meanwhile, said it had added a warning about delirium and abnormal behavior to the label for its flu drug, Relenza. There have been reports of about 700 cases of adverse psychiatric events for both drugs and 25 cases of pediatric death. That means kids taking Tamiflu. Oy.
Right now I'm leaving, so you'd better say so.
Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Museum, when people come to see him, they really are a scream, the Addams Family.
Well, listen, I subscribe to the idea when your kid asks you a question, you know, answer the question, don't bring it up. But, you know, if and Molly wanted to know about what, you know, about dead. Does everything die, she said. So, yeah. Are we the Addams Family? Not yet.
Actually, Uncle Fester, she asked where the flowers went. And somehow it ended up 5 minutes later into Molly saying, I'm going to die someday.
Well, she sings about it. At least she didn't say, I'm going to die someday and go to heaven and be with Jesus.
No, that's later.
No,
she kept running around Christmas saying, it's Jesus' birthday.
Well, that's because she goes to a Presbyterian preschool. And we said, no, it's not. Well, it is, but so what? But it's not. He was born in June. We're getting way off track here. Two Vermont towns have voted to arrest Bush and Cheney, the good citizens of Brattleboro and Marlboro, both of which appear to be on the Connecticut River in the state's southeastern corner, approved a measure that would instruct police to arrest Bush and Cheney for, quote, crimes against our Constitution, end quote. The measure also instructs town police to, quote, extradite them to other authorities that may reasonably contend to prosecute them, end quote. Well, let's see. I think there are some warrants out for Cheney in Germany, or have those been tossed out? State lawmakers in that state, in Vermont, have passed non-binding resolutions to end the war in Iraq and to impeach Bush and Cheney, and several towns have also passed resolutions of impeachment. Nobody in Washington seems to have caught on to this. Bush has never visited the state as president. There are 12,000 people in Brattleboro and 1,000, roughly, in Marlboro. We have talked about Admiral William Fallon most recently when Scott Ritter and I were at the event in Phoenix about a week and a half ago. Ritter being a former Marine, therefore not just emotionally connected to Admiral Fallon, but also through his service to the country. And we both have come to the conclusion, independently, of course, that Admiral Fallon is one of the checks. Matter of fact, I think Scott Ritter brought it up Friday a week ago, that Admiral Fallon has been an enormous check on Dick Cheney's absolute sexual desire to kill people in Iran using weapons of mass destruction, the keys to which Cheney has instant access to anytime he wants them. And Ritter and I both agreed that Fallon, Admiral Fallon, has... he's the CENTCOM commander. He's in charge of pretty much everything in that part of the world. That Admiral Fallon has been the one who has stopped this. Defense Secretary Gates has called Fallon, quote, one of the best strategic thinkers in uniform today. Do you hear that? One of the best strategic thinkers. Not tactical thinker. Strategic. Fallon, of course, opposed the surge in Iraq, too. He has consistently battled the Bush crime family to avoid a confrontation with Iran. He has called officials in the Bush crime family, their warmongering, not helpful. And privately, he has vowed that an attack on Iran, quote, will not happen on my watch, end quote. Well, guess what? Ooh, in the April issue of Esquire magazine, there's an article by Thomas P.M. Barnett that says Fallon may be prematurely, quote, relieved of his command, end quote, as soon as this summer. The article says, quote, well-placed observers now say that it will come as no surprise if Fallon is relieved of his command before his time is up next spring, maybe as early as this summer, in favor of a commander the White House considers to be more pliable. If that were to happen, the article says, it may well mean that the president and vice president intend to take military action against Iran before the end of this year and don't want a commander standing in their way, end quote. Now, in the article, Fallon also said that he was in, his words, hot water with the White House for meeting with Egyptian President Mubarak. Fallon said that such meetings are his job and they are essential in making sure that regional leaders like Mubarak don't get, quote, too spun up, end quote, by the Bush crime family's war rhetoric. And in today's White House press briefing, a reporter asked Dana Perino about the Esquire piece. Perino refused to comment about Fallon's position. Instead, she attacked what she called, quote, rumor mills that don't turn out to be true, end quote. So you knew this was coming, didn't you, truth seekers?
I am a patriot. Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot. Newsflash, the gas has been a fate. Until I won't promote black, then it take MJ's mojo and pass the Timberlake. That's why Mike hungers.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. I mentioned it, my little mini blog today at MikeMalloy.com and also at NovaMRadio.com. Regarding Condoleezza Rice, she's off again on one of her little photo ops. She is the worst Secretary of State in modern history, probably in the history of the entire country. Now, by worst, I mean in the sense of being totally ineffective and useless. The actual worst in terms of global damage was, of course, John Foster Dulles back in the 50s and 60s. But Rice is once again doing photo ops in the Middle East, flying around from capital to capital as she accomplishes absolutely nothing. A major part of her current ineffectiveness, of course, comes from the revelation that we shared with you last night that on orders from George Bush, she and the convicted felon, Elliot Abrams, were entrusted with provoking a Palestinian civil war. You can get all the information about this by going to vanityfair.com and finding the article, the sordid, nasty story. But she even failed at that, which is a staggering comment on her uselessness, given that she had the internationally known terrorist, an Iran-Contra killer and death squad organizer, an American Zionist, Elliot Abrams, as her wingman. He was there with her. Now, all the players in the Middle East ongoing tragedies are and were fully aware of the criminal activity of these two American so-called diplomats. Only the U.S. public was once again out of the loop, lied to, deceived, and ultimately, of course, we're forced to pay the enormous cost in blood and money of Bush's murderous adventures that stretch from Afghanistan or Pakistan now to Egypt. So anyway, the shoe lady is now once again having her picture taken with poor, sad, lost Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. If you saw today's New York Times, there's a picture of him there. It shows an idiotically grinning Rice and a grim-faced Mahmoud Abbas. You got to wonder what he's thinking, knowing as he does that Rice and Abrams and Bush tried to cause more dead children and blown apart houses and random charred body parts to his already bloodied and reeling population. It must take all the presence. That's why so many of these Arab men, I've never seen an Arab woman doing this, but so many Muslim, I should say, men, or Arab, Muslim, doing their prayer beads. You know, something, anything to deflect the murderous rage you must feel when you're sitting next to someone that you know tried to foment revolution against your freely elected government, for Christ's sake. But there she sat. There she sat. Now, the shoe lady was there to get poor Mahmoud Abbas to agree to more talks with the Likudniks, who are hell-bent on murdering everybody that they can in the occupied territories. The shoe lady, though, must have reminded Abbas of the destruction that she and her attack dog, Elliot Abrams, are capable of perpetrating. And they can do this anywhere. Abrams, Iran, Nicaragua, Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, El Salvador, Colombia, Venezuela. The list just goes on and on. So she must have reminded him of that, and the extent to which that sinister fact has the full backing of all branches of our government, both major political parties and their current and future presidential nominees. Everybody in government, almost to the last man and woman in this country, backs whatever atrocity Israel chooses to commit. Not only backs it, but applauds it. So Abbas kind of hung his head and picked his nose and said he will return to so-called talks with Israel. Now, incredibly, right before the shoe lady took off for more talks in Brussels, Belgium. Hello, Brussels. Hi, I'm Condoleezza Rice. Hello. Before she left, she shoved Abbas's face in it with her smarmy, infuriating comment. Quote, I understand the difficulty of the current situation, Mr. President, but we must keep our eye on what we're trying to achieve, end quote. What Condoleezza Rice was trying to achieve with the help of Elliot Abrams and George Bush was an uprising that would pit Palestinian against Palestinian and cause more death and murder and destruction because the Palestinians had the absolute gall to take seriously the idea of democracy and elect a government, one that Israel and the United States finds unappealing. Now, as a follow-up to that, Israel had pulled its troops back from Gaza on Monday, before the shoe lady's arrival in the region. A senior Israeli official said that pullback would only be a two-day interval during her visit. Okay? Today's Wednesday. 2 days are up. So Israeli forces re-entered Gaza. And the first casualty, a one-month-old baby girl killed in crossfire. A senior Islamic Jihad fighter also died after Israeli soldiers in 25 armored vehicles entered the territory Tuesday night and clashed with Palestinian fighters before pulling back about 2 hours later. Several Islamic Jihad fighters were also arrested in the operation. And these clashes, of course, come just today after Israel ended their ground operation in Gaza, which left 120 Palestinians dead, the majority of which, if you believe the news reports, were women and children. Oh, well. It's not going to stop. I can sit here and piss off the pro-Israel crowd night after night after night, and it doesn't mean a thing. Except it'll just make you work harder to get me off the air. but it won't work, not with this network. No. You want to do Chuckle Nuts? No, you want to wait on Chuckle Nuts? All right. There's been a couple of hearings going on yesterday and today in Congress. Yesterday, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, David Satterfield, and Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, Mary Beth Long, they both said that as far as the Bush administration is concerned, Congress is irrelevant on Iraq. They will do anything they goddamn please. Now, that drew an incredulous reaction from Democrats on a joint House committee during a hearing on future U.S. commitments to Iraq. Gary Ackerman, who's a Democrat from New York, said, "It's the view of the administration that as long as there's trouble in Iraq, you have the authorization to continue there in perpetuity and define the troubles as you desire." And Mr. Satterfield answered, "We have authorization to defend the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq." The continuing threat posed by Iraq. And then he added, for emphasis, "You know, the situation in Iraq continues to present a threat to the United States." How is that, you sick son of a bitch? How does Iraq present it? Oh, never mind. The Bush administration, according to testimony there, also feels it doesn't need to seek the authorization of Congress to ratify two pending agreements with Iraq. One is the strategic framework that would normalize the relations with the U.S. and give us all their oil. And a second agreement is a status of forces agreement that would govern what is referred to as the authorities and protections of U.S. troops in Iraq past this coming December 31st, which is the expiration date of a U.N. resolution that the Bush crime family says authorizes their presence to begin with. So what they are saying here, these Bush crime family members are saying we can do anything we want to in Iraq with no oversight from Congress. Well, so far you've done it for 5 years, so that's not a big revelation. And we can make plans to do anything in the future that we want to without oversight in Congress. That certainly flows from the first idea, of course. And thirdly, any troop adjustments or any... we call it authorities and protections of U.S. troops. If we have 140,000 troops there, we may feel that in order to protect them, we need another 200,000. And we can do it on our own with no authorization, conversation, or discussion with any of you dumbasses that sit here in Congress, especially you Democrats, the few of you remaining who challenge us. The Republican members of Congress do not challenge us, and most of you Democrats do not, but there's still a couple, three of you who insist on exercising your constitutional authority. I am here to tell you today that's not going to happen, booby. Do you understand? So Representative Bill Delahunt, Democrat from Massachusetts, says, "You don't intend to submit this particular status of forces agreement with its authority to fight to the Congress for its approval?" And Mary Beth Long, Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, Mary Beth Long said, "Well, Congressman Delahunt, the Secretary of Defense, has already testified, and I believe Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has reiterated that is our intent and our obligation to coordinate with the members." And then Delahunt said, "Coordination is a lovely word, and I know consultation and notification are also words that are being used and will be used, but I use the word authorization. It's the position of this administration. They do not need to come before Congress to receive authorization."
Mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Way up to here. So these two appeared before Congress yesterday, U.S. Ambassador David Satterfield, Ambassador to Iraq, and Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, Mary Beth Long. And they say that, we will coordinate our actions regarding war, death and destruction, funding, financing, invasions, agreements, and treaties. We'll coordinate with you. And Congressman Delahunt, Democrat from Massachusetts, says coordination is a lovely word, as are consultation and notification. But is it the position of this administration that they do not need to come before Congress to receive authorization? Mary Beth Long said, that's correct. Mr. Satterfield said, that's correct. So there you have it. Congress, thanks to a combination of murderous inaction on the part of the filthy, disgusting Republicans who have infested that body since 94, and the do-nothing, cowardly Democrats who have done nothing to stop this shredding of the Constitution, thanks to all of that, the Democrats and the Republicans have accomplished what apparently they set out to accomplish, and that is the total destruction of the legislative branch of government as an effective counterbalance, co-equal partner to the executive branch. So now these useless sons of bitches can all sit in their House and Senate committees and pretend like they're doing God's work and draw their paychecks and get their wonderful health insurance and go back and lie to the constituents, House members every 2 years, Senate members every six, get reelected, go back, do it again, do it again, do it again. And I wonder if any of them ever will take any responsibility for the fact that this country very slowly and easily, with the rails extremely greased, slides right into corporatism. Or, if you prefer the more triggery word, fascism. You think? Nah, of course not. They are, after all, members of Congress. Phone call here. Kenneth is calling from Las Vegas, listening on the internet. Hey, Kenneth, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Good, good. Listen, I just want to thank you for standing in the gap, not only for Palestinians, but for people around the world who are just voiceless. They're not going to be heard in this debate and this argument, but they're victims, and it ranges even further than, you said, Pakistan over to Egypt, but certainly it goes into Sudan and Chad and all the way down to Uganda and Kenya. There is war raging right now as a result of this administration's policies, and we don't even hear about it. We don't know about it, and no one wants to, wants to talk about it, much less look at it any closer than what you're doing. And I know you're, just kind of skimming the surface here in your discussions about it, but, people talk about what's going on in Darfur as though it is a special case. And, you want to go in there and save all of these lives in Darfur. But the real agenda is that southern Sudan is full of oil.
That's right.
Chad and northern Uganda and Kenya now, where they've discovered oil reserves recently, and the same people who are denying not only Palestinians their rights, but also sponsoring this war in Iraq are now turning their eyes to Sudan. And all of this nonsense that we're hearing about, all of these deaths that everybody cares about, so to speak, in Darfur, but they don't care about what's going on in Katrina, is a serious joke.
It is. It's a serious, sad, degenerate joke that exposes the minds of these people as being rat-infested hovels that just take pleasure in seeing other people suffer. It's
you mentioned Condoleezza earlier, and of course you remember she was the first one to go to Darfur and label it as being genocide. Why did she and Colin Powell, why were they sent there to make that label when Nelson Mandela has defied that label, mm-hmm. Bishop Tutu has defied that label, even Jimmy Carter has defied that label, mm-hmm. because what they claim is going on in Sudan is not going on, but what they are causing to happen is a war. They want to have UN forces plunged into the area, and they are intending to escalate that conflict so that they can petition Sudan north and south, a la Vietnam, Korea, and essentially exploit the oil reserves in southern Sudan.
Well, they better hurry up, and I'll tell you why, Kenneth, because the Chinese are already there. The Chinese, who are desperate for oil to a greater degree than we are for survival.
Well, that's only partially true. The Chinese are helping the Sudanese to develop their resources. They don't have anyone else helping them.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is the Chinese are not there because they have some altruistic motive to help the Sudanese. They are there for the same reason that you said we are fomenting all this destruction and chaos. They're there for the oil.
Sure, but if you look at it closely, they are not there to create a war and bloodshed and pillaging.
Well, no, because they're willing to deal with the oil reserves in the old fashioned way. They're willing to make contracts and that benefit both parties and buy it and pay for it. And of course, we have learned, we being the U.S. oil companies, that's a candy ass way to do it. You don't go in and make deals and buy and pay and no. You go in and foment disruption and revolution and murder and mayhem and death and destruction. Then you step in and take over. Very simple. Thanks, Kenneth. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. All right, let's do some of this Bush sound from his endorsement of insane John McCain today. I heard McCain after he and Bush played little grab ass up on the portico there. Here, pat the turkey, pat the bunny. And McCain said afterward that. I mean, he couldn't. He was so effusive in his praise. Here is a guy, McCain, standing there looking at a man who, first of all, was a coward and showed his cowardice by running into the Texas Air National Guard and then deserting and going into Alabama to hide in a cotton patch somewhere, while McCain was putting his precious life at risk by bombing civilians over Hanoi until he got shot down. Here's Bush, who is a liar, a sneak, a thief, a fraud, and somebody who authorized back in 2000 the most vicious whispering and phone campaign against McCain probably in a long time in presidential politics. Everything from the race of his child to the drug habits of his wife to the cowardice of Senator McCain himself. Why? Because McCain abandoned his buddies in Vietnam. Now, all of that, which cost McCain the nomination, the Republican nomination back in 2000, had McCain beat Bush's ass in New Hampshire and was on the way to beating him in South Carolina. And Karl Rove, of course, would have none of that because the neocon agenda still had four more years to run. So they attacked McCain using all the Christian nutballs in the South Pat Robertson, and what's that school in Columbia, in South Carolina, the Christian crazy place? Or no, not Oral Roberts, the other one. Anyway, let's see, Pat Robertson. Who's the one that died? Falwell. How quickly they slide into hell and we forget their names, right?
I'm going to die someday.
Yeah, okay. So given all of that, what they did to him, to McCain, and then he stands there, you know, like he's ready to kiss Bush. No, he doesn't. No, Bush is ready to kiss him, and McCain is ready to open his mouth and accept Bush's tongue. It's just vile. Disgusting. I mean, at this point, McCain, after having made Chucklenuts wait, why did McCain walk up on the porch and say, hey, jackass, keep your hands off of me. I'm taking your job unless, you know, the black guy or the chick gets the presidency. I don't think that's going to happen. You don't know what we got planned for them. But don't put your hands on me, Bush, you filthy pig. Why didn't he do that? If he would have done that, I would have voted for him. Before McCain got there, Bush did a little soft shoe for the press. Did you see that? Oh, it was so cute. It was so cute. Oh, my God. I almost lost my lunch. It was so cute. Shuffle, shuffle, step, step. Shuffle, shuffle, step, step. Ah, oh, please. But there he stood, bunny pants next to insane McCain and his wife, Cindy Lou. And Bush gives him a jocular endorsement.
I have got to know John well in the last 8 years. I've campaigned against him, and I've campaigned with him. Laura and I have spent time in their house. It's a man who deeply loves his family. It's a man who cares a lot about the less fortunate among us.
He's a what?
He's a president, and he's going to be the president who will bring determination to defeat an enemy and a heart big enough to love those who hurt.
And a man with a plan to continue my war in Iraq for at least another full century. I love this man. Come here, John. Keep your lizard wife away from me. Come here, John. I love you. I love you. Laura and I have spent time in their house, which remarkably is totally free of any insect life. Cindy? This is a man who deeply loves his family. Let's sing along. There are 50 ways to love your lizard. It's too much. The rest of the press conference consisted of the press asking Bush and McCain questions, and of course Bush answering all of them. Here Bush chuckles a bit about change in the White House. The reporter says, I'd like to ask you both of how the Republican Party, which has been here for 8 years, is going to make the case that you're going to provide the change that the voters seem to want, both on Iraq and the economy.
Every candidate has got to say change. That's what the American people expect. And
they're dumb.
The good news about our candidate is there'll be a new president, a man of character and courage.
Yeah.
But he's not going to change when it comes to taking on the enemy. He understands this is a dangerous world.
Dangerous.
And I understand we better have steadfast leadership.
Leadership.
Who's got the courage and determination to pursue this enemy.
Enemy.
So as to protect America. John McCain will find out when he takes the oath of office, his most important responsibility is to protect the American people from harm.
No, it isn't.
And there's still an enemy that lurks.
That's you.
An enemy that wants to strike us.
That's you.
And this country better have somebody in that Oval Office who understands the stakes. And John McCain understands those stakes. Thank you, sir. I don't have anything to add.
Thank you, sir. May I touch your privates just once? A man of character and courage, but he's not going to change when it comes to taking on the enemy. Glad to know McCain's official position is that he'll maintain Bush's disastrous foreign policy and endless terror wars. Yeah, well, that's good. The military-industrial establishment were just, choking on their triple martini lunches and sitting there grabbing their crotches saying, oh, yeah! Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah. Or was that for Hillary? No, it's for McCain. Doesn't matter. Next reporter asked about McCain's vice presidential choice.
Mr. President, Senator McCain, sir, how would you counsel Senator McCain to choose a running mate? How quickly? And given the fact that Democrats will find a nominee who will make some kind of history, a woman, an African-American, should Republicans consider that in selecting a vice presidential nominee?
I tell him to be careful about who he names to be the head of the selection committee.
A woman or an African American on the Democratic side?
People don't vote for vice presidents, as much as I hate to say that for those who have been candidates for vice president. They're going to vote for who gets to sit inside that Oval Office and make decisions on how to protect the country and keep taxes low.
Uh-huh.
And how to have a culture that respects the dignity of every human being.
And illegal wiretapping and waterboarding and tens of thousands of dead and maimed and decimation of the Constitution. When does the dignity begin, Chuckle Nuts? Respects the dignity. What dignity? Oh, that's right. They are subhuman insect-eating, oops, no, I don't mean, no offense, Cindy, insect-eating terrorists, so they have no dignity. Torture them again! Maybe Cheney should run again. Raisin Brain says, I'd tell him to be careful about who he names to be head of the selection committee. Remember, that's what Dick Cheney did about 8 years ago, and Cheney looked under a pile of corpses and rotting flesh and maggots and found himself and said, oh, here I am, George. I found me. I'll be your nudge, nudge, wink, wink, vice president. Maybe the Republicans can run Cheney again. He's only 2,000 years old, but he does have new body parts. So, you know, it's a thought. One more from Chuckle Nuts when we come back. And then I have something for you. All of you are going to hate. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
When you see him stumbling up and down the street, you know that cat's been drinking. Shoes upon his feet, then he's high. I said that cat is high. Yes, it's high. Then he's higher than a guy.
Schmutz, mama, schmutz, mama. Look at that little boy's eye. You know schmutz, I won't mama, lie. Schmutz, mama. That's higher than a guy. Boy, schmutz, mama, high. Mama. Oh, look at that mama, black schmutz, eye. Oh, my, my.
Mike Molloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
21 past the hour. Last one here, Chuckle Nuts endorsing Insane McCain today. Boy, what a dynamic duo these two are, huh? Last bit of fun and frivolity here from the unelected idiot. A reporter asks about Bush's role in the McCain campaign. I love how King George interrupts McCain when he dares to try to interrupt the comedy routine. The reporter says, Mr. President, do you or how much do you intend to do for Senator McCain? And do you think in some cases that your help could actually hurt him more than help him?
You know, look, they're not going to be voting for me. I've had my time in the Oval Office. It's been a fabulous experience, by the way. And they're going to be voting for the next person to come in here and make the tough decisions about America. And it's not about me.
It never was.
You know, I've done my bit. And by the way, I'm not through. And I'm going to do a lot. And John's right. I do have a day job to keep. And I plan on keeping. I've told the people that follow me in this press corps that I'm going to sprint to the finish. And I mean what I say. I got a lot to do. But I'm going to find ample time to help, and I can help raising money. And if he wants my pretty face standing by his side at one of these rallies, I'll be glad to show up. But they're not. They're going to be looking at him. You know, I'm going to be in Crawford with my feet up.
Where do you think you can be most helpful campaigning for him around the country?
You know, as I told you, if he wants me to show up, I will. If he wants me to say, you know, I'm not for him, I will. Whatever he wants me to do, I want him to win. And, you know, well, if I don't know where. I mean, look.
Could I start out with...
I'm focusing on, you know, protecting America and succeeding in Iraq and dealing with the North Korean and dealing with the Iranian and dealing with the issues around the world where we're making a difference in terms of keeping peace.
Oh, my God, you delusional psychopath, you. You are so out of your mind. It's been a fabulous experience, my time in the Oval Office. Really, y'all. It's been great. Anybody see my old Coke spoon? Can you get that all polished up for me? I'm just about out of here, man. I can't wait to... Ah! They're going to be looking at him, not me. You know, I'm going to be out in Crawford with my feet up and a beer in one hand and my spoon firmly up my nose and off to my next lifetime failure until some Saudi freak bails me out. Huh? And shut up, McCain. This isn't about you. You're just standing here with your wife, the Liz, or Cindy. It has nothing to do with you. Shut up, boy. I'm sorry, you're older than me, aren't you? Well, shut up, Lieutenant Commander. Oh, God. Well, for you people who like Bush, you are going to love John McCain. You're just going to love him to death. I'll tell you what, let's take a call here. Charles is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I got a couple things. One, first on Darfur and then this NAFTA leak.
Okay.
First on Darfur, the Chinese are there to get oil, and then what they do is... They also send weapons to the government of Sudan in exchange for the oil.
Right.
And then the government uses those weapons to kill off people in Darfur.
Yeah, okay.
So that's basically what's going on over there.
Right.
Now, concerning this NAFTA leak, man, there's a lot of controversy right there in Canada about this. Did you see the video where the Canadian Parliament member accused the Prime Minister of leaking this memo?
Yeah, don't forget, there is a so-called conservative government in Canada right now. Would love to see another psychopathic conservative here in the United States. So this whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, is an absolute lie, a scam. It's fraud. It's anything to bring Senator Obama down. And that's my take on it anyway.
That's right, because there's people in Canada who are against NAFTA also. Because it hurts the working and middle class there.
Right.
And so, it's come out now. I'm looking at this thing. The Winnipeg Sun accused. They're saying that the Prime Minister's chief of staff was the source of the leak.
Yeah.
So basically, they come up with this memo, and they say that Obama's economic advisor said that Obama was just talking, right?
Yeah.
For political reasons, and basically that was just made up.
Already the Canadian embassy in D.C. has apologized for the whole event and said that it absolutely did not happen the way it was reported in the media here. But now it seems like the Canadian government is saying in a roundabout way, yes, it did happen, but nobody was supposed to know about it. So look for the Canadian ambassador to the United States to be recalled. Or else they'll say, well, one of his assistants spoke out of turn or what have you. But, the whole thing stinks. And as far as I'm concerned, it's just one attempt by one right-wing organization, that would be the Canadian Prime Minister, to bolster another right-wing organization, and that would be the John McCain attempt to get the presidency. Hey, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, and I just want to say it's a dangerous precedent for American citizens just to blindly to believe a memo some guy comes.
It is. But we've done that before. Thanks, Charles. Take care. We'll be back after the break, and then I'm going to piss you all off. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You can't take the high horse and then claim the low road. The past is over, I agree. We all know the...
I'm obviously disappointed with the outcome of the election.
Actually, I thought we were going to do fine. Shows what I know. It was a thumping.
A thumping. Jesus. 26 before the hour. You're listening to NOVEM Radio Network. My name is Mike Molloy. All right, this is the part of the program where the Obamans and the Clintonites... send me the hate mail and, you know, tell me I'm just a traitor and why don't I just go be a Republican? All right, we're going to start out. This is from Progressive Review. Their web address is prorev.com, P-R-O-R-E-V.com. How to tell Obama and Clinton apart is the overarching title. But it begins with how Obama and Clinton are alike. Their positions are often barely indistinguishable from that of the Republicans. They have built their campaigns around genetic identity rather than on political principles and issues. They take multiple positions on individual issues such as NAFTA. They have produced no interesting new ideas nor promised to fight for any important new programs. They have offered no good idea about how to handle the current economic crisis. They have gone about their campaigns as though they were leading a cult rather than a political movement. Clinton hangs out with a covert group of right-wing Republican Christians. Obama would name some of them to his cabinet. They have similar voting records, with Progressive Punch ranking Obama 19th and Clinton 24th in the Senate in terms of their progressive record. They both dissed Ralph Nader for daring to run for president again. Obama wrote that conservatives and Bill Clinton were right to destroy social welfare. Clinton supported her husband's program. Hillary Clinton comes in 38th and Obama comes in 48th in the ranking of the League of Conservation Voters. Both have hawkish foreign policy advisors involved in past U.S. misdeeds and failures. Both support Israeli aggression and Israeli apartheid. Obama has deserted previous support for two-state solution to the Middle East situation. Both have voted numerous times to continue funding the war. Both support or won't oppose nuclear power. Both support the so-called war on drugs. Both support a national ID card. Both support Bush's failed No Child Left Behind. Both support crack cocaine sentence disparity. Both oppose single-payer health care. Both support the Patriot Act. Both support the death penalty. Both have no clear plan to leave Iraq or Afghanistan. Both support charter schools. And both support federally funded ethanol. Ooh. Damn, I hate it when Molloy talks about their real position, their real voting record. That makes me so mad. Can I just talk about how I love change, or how much I love Hillary, or how much I really, I don't know what the right phrase is. Get off, I guess, is the right phrase on having an African-American be president. Damn that Molloy. Brings up facts. We don't want no damn facts. How Clinton and Obama are different. While they both have seamy friends, so far only one has surfaced for Obama, Resco, as opposed to a lengthy list for Clinton that begins with three close business partners who ended up in prison. Obama, unlike Clinton, has never been almost indicted. Obama, unlike Clinton, has never been mentioned 35 times in a criminal indictment. Obama, unlike Clinton, did not support the appointment of the now indicted Bernie Kerik to be the head of Homeland Security. Obama would be good at international negotiations. Foreign leaders wouldn't know whether to trust Clinton. Obama is not married to Bill Clinton. Obama has revealed his tax returns. Clinton hasn't. Clinton thinks McCain would be better qualified for the White House than Obama. Obama would rather have Hillary Clinton than McCain. The Clinton administration, according to a Hillary Rodham Clinton ad, wouldn't answer an emergency White House call until the sixth ring. The Obama administration, it is implied, would wait for the seventh. Obama voted against immunity for telecom's illegal spying on Americans. Clinton didn't show up for the vote. Obama has inspired a lot of young and minority voters to get involved in politics. Clinton has relied upon a traditional and aging constituency. Obama favored banning cluster bombs in civilian areas. Clinton opposed that ban. Obama opposed putting heating fuel assistance for low income in the stimulus bill, but Clinton supported it. Obama also... Now, I've gotten the Clinton supporters pissed off. Now let's go for the Obama supporters. Obama promises not to sign a trade bill without environmental and labor protections. Obama helped fight for restoration of habeas corpus at Gitmo. These are all the good ones. Obama aggressively opposed impeachment action against Bush. Obama wouldn't have his photo taken with San Francisco mayor because he was afraid it would seem that he supported gay marriage. Obama supported restricting damage awards in medical malpractice suits. Obama supported making it harder to file class action suits in state courts. Obama misled on extent of his lobbyist support. Obama called the late Paul Wellstone, quote, something of a gadfly, end quote. Obama voted for a business-friendly tort reform bill. Obama voted for a nuclear energy bill that included money for bunker buster bombs and full funding for Yucca Mountain. Obama won't rule out a first nuclear attack on Iran. Obama received $708,000 from medical and insurance interests between 2001 and 2006. Obama went to Connecticut to support Joe Lieberman in the primary against Ned Lamont. Obama refuses to take a position on the anti-constitutional Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. Obama called Pakistan, quote, the right battlefield in the war on terrorism, end quote, and threatened to invade Pakistan. Obama uses various evangelical cons to win supporters. Obama has not revealed his proposed policies in many areas, and where he has, they primarily consist of minor alterations in the status quo. Obama voted against a 30% interest rate cap on credit cards. Obama opposed the war as a state senator. He is less certain as a federal senator and has voted for full funding of it. Obama wrote critically in his books of the New Deal and the New Left, but praised Bill Clinton. Now, in case I didn't really piss off the Clinton voters, let's go back to Clinton. She favors health care individual mandates that would help insurance companies and banks, but not citizens. Clinton has the most number of foreign lobbyist contributors. Clinton is even more popular with Pentagon contractors than McCain. Clinton has received the most funds from the oil industry. Clinton has received the most funds from the health industry. And Clinton submitted the largest false campaign finance report. Oh. Oh, Malloy, you son of a bitch. Don't confuse us with facts. Don't talk about their position. I've waited all my life to see a woman become president. I've waited all my life to see a black man become president. Really? Well, I guess that's all that matters then, right? just don't confuse the issue or muddy the water with who these two candidates really are, what they're really in favor of, what they're really against, who supports them, where they get their money, who their advisors will be, who their advisors have advised in other situations, what that advice was. Nah, don't go for the facts. The facts are squirmy little nasty things like maggots, you know. They're just awful. Awful. It is much easier and decidedly more fun to play make-believe.
Oh, I love Barack Obama. He just, you know, almost fainted at his last rally. Don't you just love him? Don't care much for his wife, but I sure love him. Oh, God, he's going to be president. I know he's going to be president. Yay, yay for our team. Yay for our team. Yay, yay, yay. I love Hillary. I've always loved Hillary. You know what Bill did to her and what that dirty, rotten press corps did to her all those years? All Hillary wanted to do is make things good for America. I love her. She did good raising her daughter. Have you seen her daughter? Her daughter's just so pretty and so balanced and doesn't eat lead anymore. And I just love Hillary. And I want her to be president because she's a woman. And I'm a woman. And I just want her to be president so bad. And I don't like all this. And turn that goddamn Mike Malloy off. I can't.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, as far as all those similarities and stuff, I wrote the other day about what's going on in northern South America between Ecuador, Colombia, and Venezuela. The Colombians, with the help of Southern Command, the U.S. military command that is trying to take over South America, especially that part of it because of the oil, coordinated, arranged, and probably provided all the firepower for a strike by the Colombian military that can't find its ass with both hands. So the planning of this operation was way over its head. Consequently, the general agreement that this was done by the U.S. military, they went into Ecuador, which is kind of against the law. You know, they crossed the international boundary with their military and executed an alleged terrorist, drug dealer, or whatever the hell he was. I'm not even sure. Nobody knows. Nobody knows the truth about Colombia, since Plan Colombia, put together by Bill Clinton and followed through by George W. Bush. Plan Colombia is a way to... one of the results has been Colombia is now the third largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid after Egypt and Israel. And all that aid is going where? To educate the Colombians? To provide health clinics? No. To beef up the military, because there's oil right next door in Venezuela, and we've got to get that oil. It's ours. So anyway. Crossing an international border to commit murder is kind of, you know, regardless of George Bush's attitude, that's kind of not the kosher thing to do anywhere. You know, you can ask for an extradition. You can send in a hit squad. You can be cool about it. You can sneak in the darkness, execute the poor bastard and leave. But these people went in with gunships blasting. Maybe to provoke a response? What do you think? Well, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have positions on it. Here's what Hillary had to say about Colombia's clearly illegal incursion into Ecuador. Was it Ecuador? Or was it Bolivia? Ecuador. Come on, Mike, wake up. Yeah, Ecuador. Here's what Hillary Clinton said. Hugo Chavez's order yesterday to send 10 battalions to the Colombian border is unwarranted and dangerous. Now, Chavez, of course, is the president of Venezuela. The Colombian state has every right to defend itself against drug trafficking terrorist organizations that have kidnapped innocent civilians, including American citizens, by praising and supporting the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. That would be FARC. Chavez is openly siding with terrorists that threaten Colombian democracy and the peace and security of the region. Rather than criticizing Colombia's actions in combating terrorist groups in the borders regions, Venezuela and Ecuador should work with their neighbor to ensure that their territories no longer serve as safe havens for terrorist groups. After reviewing this situation, I am hopeful that the government of Ecuador will determine that its interests lie in closer cooperation with Colombia on this issue. Hugo Chavez must call a halt to this provocative action. As president, I will work with our partners in the region and the OAS to support democracy promoted into conflict and press Chavez to change course. Notice there's no mention there of the Colombian military that actually committed the crime. It's Chavez who has to stop his provocative action. Here's a statement by Barack Obama. The Colombian people have suffered for more than four decades at the hands of a brutal terrorist insurgency, and the Colombian government has every right to defend itself against the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. That would be FARC. The recent targeted killing of a senior FARC leader must not be used as a pretense to ratchet up tensions or to threaten the stability of the region. The presidents of Colombia, Ecuador, and Venezuela have a responsibility to ensure that events not spiral out of control and to peacefully address any disputes through active diplomacy with the help of international actors. End quote. You might be able to make an argument, Barack, that the Colombian people have suffered for more than four decades because for four decades they have had, for the most part, a right-wing, militaristic, death squad-laden, U.S.-supported government that doesn't give a damn about the people. A government that is corrupt from top to bottom. All the governments. Barack, 40 years this has been going on. What does that say? It started, Senator Obama, when you were 7 years old. So someone tell me the difference between... Now, you can get this whole article. Go to commondreams.org. Commondreams.org. It's written by Robert Naiman. Who is Robert Naiman? I'm glad you asked. Robert Naiman is National Coordinator of JUST, J-U-S-T, Foreign Policy, a membership organization devoted to reforming U.S. foreign policy to reflect the values and serve the interests of the majority of Americans. And Mr. Naiman edits the daily JUST Foreign Policy news summary. But if you go to commondreams.org, it's there. Obama glosses over Colombian attack in Ecuador. Clinton calls for escalation against Venezuela. Now, for those of you who back Hillary Clinton, do you understand what's going on here? Please tell me you do. Colombia essentially invades Ecuador to kill someone. Ecuador recalls its ambassador. Venezuela recalls its ambassador. Venezuela, no, Hugo Chavez knows, after being thrown in jail in a failed coup attempt backed by the CIA... several years ago, Hugo Chavez knows that there is nothing that the U.S. government would rather do than murder his ass like they did Salvador Allende and get control of all that oil. Hillary Clinton then says Hugo Chavez should stand down. Hugo Chavez, Mrs. Clinton, didn't do anything. The Colombian government and the U.S. military did, Mrs. Clinton. We'll be right back.
to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. We're going to take phone calls. So if you would like to get online, the number is 800-989-1480. And that is going to happen as soon as I just drop this last one into the mix. And in calling in tonight, I would ask you to focus your phone calls, your comments on what we've been what I've been talking about for the past 2 hours. That makes continuity. And I'm curious about what you think. I mean, I sit here and go on and on and on about this stuff. And I would like to get your opinion, too, if you want to participate. If not, I understand. It's okay. It's all right. This last one, this is from the Associated Press today. More FBI privacy violations confirmed. Robert Mueller was testifying today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he admitted that the FBI improperly used national security letters in 2006 to obtain personal data on Americans during the FBI's terror and spy investigations. Mueller told the committee that the privacy breach by FBI agents and breach? No, Bob, it wasn't a breach. You son of a bitch, you ordered it. Don't pretend like, ooh, the sky opened or the ground opened. That's it, the ground opened and we fell into a pit. No. It wasn't a privacy breach. It was a privacy violation ordered. Oh, never mind. Mueller said that the privacy breach by FBI agents and lawyers occurred a year before the Bureau enacted sweeping new reforms to prevent future lapses. Boys, you had to enact reforms? You couldn't read the goddamn Constitution of the United States, you freaks? You never heard of the Fourth Amendment? And I use the word goddamn because my president did regarding the Constitution. This report that Mr. Mueller was talking about is a follow-up to an audit by the Inspector General a year ago that found the FBI demanded. Hi, I'm here with a warrant. No. I demand this! The FBI demanded personal data on people from banks, telephone companies, internet providers, and credit bureaus. Hey, how about that? Without official authorization, no warrants, and in non-emergency circumstances from 2003 to 2005. Hello. You see, the legislation guaranteeing retroactive immunity to the telecoms, that everybody seems to support, doesn't just include the telecoms, truth seeker. It also includes the credit bureaus, the banks, the internet providers. Well, I guess that would be telecoms, wouldn't it, Mueller, in his testimony, noted the senator's concerns about American civil and privacy rights. And he said the new report, quote, will identify issues similar to those in the report issued last March. Oh, well, all of a sudden I feel completely relaxed. Thank God. The similarities, he said, are because the time period of the two studies, quote, predates the reforms we now have in place. So it's okay. Take some oxygen. And then Mueller added, quote, we are committed to ensuring that we not only get this right, but maintain the vital trust of the American people, end quote. Hey, you dumb bastard, you have lost the trust of the American people years ago. Get what right? You've got a document, Mueller, that you swore to uphold. You committed perjury when you did this, in addition to violating the law, and that is the Constitution. Fourth Amendment, Mueller. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, places, and papers unless served upon by a duly ordered warrant. Why are you screaming, Malloy? In contrast to the outrage by Congress and civil liberties groups after last year's report was issued, Mueller's disclosure today drew no criticism from senators during just over 2 hours of testimony. Of course not. And you know why not, don't you? Because the Congress of the United States, that would be the House and the Senate, have been totally castrated and subdued. Oh, that's right. The Congress of the United States of America, both the House and the Senate, has been rendered ineffective, useless. It has been subdued. It is totally, totally without function. Superfluous to the highest degree. The Congress of the United States, the House and the Senate, is meaningless. I quoted for you testimony today before a different committee where spokespeople for the Bush crime family made the point clear and under oath. You are irrelevant, Mr. House member. You are irrelevant, Mrs. Senator. You do not matter. So here's the FBI director kind of putting the icing on the cake. Speaking before the before Mueller spoke, Senate Judiciary Chairman Patrick Leahy.
By God, there's the good old liberal, huh? A real fighter for the Constitution.
Patrick Leahy urged Mueller to be more vigilant in correcting what Leahy called widespread, illegal, and improper use of...
Senator.
Oh, national security letters. Okay. Patrick Leahy urges Mueller to be more vigilant. Son of a bitch. Leahy added, quote, everybody wants to stop terrorists, but...
Senator.
But we also, as Americans, we believe in our privacy rights and we want those protected.
You think I'm kidding? A former FBI agent, Michael German, now a national security advisor for the ACLU, said Mueller's admission that the Bureau violated laws for the fourth year in a row underscores the need to have a judge sign off on the subpoenas. You know, the way the FISA Act is written, you know, rule of law, remember? Mr. German also cast doubt on FBI reforms to prevent future abuse. Really? He said, quote, there were guidelines before, and there were laws before, and the FBI violated those guidelines and the laws, and the idea the new guidelines will make a difference, I think, cuts against rationality. End quote. An earlier report from March 9th last year blamed agent error and shoddy record keeping, of course, for the bulk of the problems and did not find any indication of criminal misconduct. No, it was just mistakes. You know, we had new agents in here and we had clerks. What do you expect? Bad record keeping. Damn, I wish our computers worked. Oh, well. The report uncovered thousands of examples of the FBI's failure to properly report the number of national security letters as required by law.
Oh, your shoddy record keeping, agent error. Move on. There's nothing here to look at. Don't, you know, no. Come on. Come on, move on.
In 2005, for example, more than 1,000 violations within 19,000 FBI requests to obtain 47,000 records were discovered. Shoddy record keeping and, you know, agent error.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Twenty-one past the hour, as promised. Let's go to the phones. Charles is calling. We talked with Charles. Remember, we talked with Charles before the last break. Let's go to Leanne, who is calling from San Diego, listening on the internet. Hi, Leanne.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm fine.
I'm glad that you are the only talk show host, and I do mean only one, really speaking the truth about our present field of candidates, meaning Hillary and Obama.
Well, surely other people in the liberal persuasion are bringing this stuff out, aren't they?
No, they're not, and that's the problem, is they're all being one-sided. They're taking sides, Randy and what's her name on the day show, the one you were in that conference with. She's an Obama. Hillary's for Obama. Tom Hartman says he'll vote for anybody. To be honest with you, I'm not inspired by either one of them.
Do you mean Rachel Maddow?
Rachel Maddow. I mean, you could tell she's a bias for Obama. They're all siding with Obama. And the problem is, I'm not inspired by either one. And just by what you read today, I mean, I felt this all along. Once Kucinich got out, and then next after him, I really wanted Edwards and Kucinich. I have had no interest in either one of these candidates. I really don't. So I'm thinking, and I know a lot of people are going to be angry, I'm thinking about voting for Nader. I'm really sick of it. I am sick to my stomach.
You know, you got to just stop thinking, and I'm not giving you advice. I'm just kind of talking here off the top of my head. You got to stop thinking about what other people will think about what you do in the voting booth, because, first of all, nobody's going to know. Secondly, none of our votes really matter anymore anyway. But I know what you mean. In the primary here in Georgia, I voted for Barack Obama. I'm at the same point you are. I think I did it as a lark or I don't know, as a choice of what I consider to be the least evil on the Democratic ticket. But I'll tell you, I'm at the same point exactly that you are. Neither of these candidates inspire anything in me except a desperately suppressed gag reflex. All right, granted, Barack Obama can stand out there and really give a speech. You know, I will sit and listen to Barack Obama for at least 5 or 6 minutes, and I'm not trying to be cute here, at least 5 or 6 minutes before I turn him off, because at the end of 5 or 6 minutes, he starts repeating himself.
Exactly.
And since he is not addressing on specifically what he would do as president of the United States, it becomes... it's kind of like being in church after the first five or six minutes. And even though I'm an atheist, I was brought up in the church. I know what a good sermon sounds like. Hell, I enjoy a good sermon even now. And all of a sudden, Barack Obama is preaching to me. And it's like, goodbye, Senator.
Exactly.
And as far as Hillary, are you kidding me? Hillary has as much stage presence as a frog. It is just painful to watch.
And you know exactly what you said last night. Everyone's saying, but with Supreme Court, Tom Hartman's on today. With Supreme Court, we got it. Who knows? Like you said, they just appoint. That doesn't mean that just because they get...
No, they not. Yeah, they nominate.
Right, they nominate.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to get elected. How do you know they're going to even appoint somebody, someone that's going to be really a left-wing judge? It could be middle of the road. I mean, they're middle of the road candidates.
Yeah.
My question to you is, this time after Bush, after 8 years, progressives had a choice. We had a choice. We had Kucinich, we had Edwards, and they were passed up. I want to know why so many progressives went after Hillary and Obama, why they chose them. Because there is a major problem with our party then.
I have a quick answer for you, and that is... even the most rabid Hillary or Barack fan, and that's what they are, fans, understands this very simple fact. America will not elect a liberal or a progressive. It's not going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is because most people are afraid to elect a liberal or a progressive. And I don't understand
but
that.
Edwards because, I mean, Edwards wasn't really liberal.
No, he wasn't a liberal.
You cannot say that he was not someone that appealed to a lot of people. I think even some Republicans.
He did, but he was seen as a populist. And people are afraid of that these days. The average.
Why are they afraid?
I don't know. This sounds like circular logic, but they're afraid because they're cowards. And they're cowards.
People like you and I and Democrats. Okay, I say Republicans are afraid, but even Democrats are afraid to vote for someone like Edwards, who
yes.
is saying.
Better. Who was it that said better the devil you know than the devil you don't know? People are going to go with the Democratic candidate because we have, and you know this, you absolutely know this to be true, Leanne. I've said it many times on the program, and you don't need me to tell you this. We are the most ignorant electorate in the history of representative government in any country. We don't know what these people represent. The women or the men who are inspired by Hillary are inspired by Hillary because she's female. The people who are inspired by Barack are inspired by him because he's an African American. They are not interested in what the positions are. If they check the positions of these two candidates, they would run away screaming, you're Bush light.
No, then there is no hope. Because
there is no
hope. Progressives are not even choosing things
until Americans find their voice and decide they've had enough of Nazi and Nazi light. Then it might happen.
The Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses.
Twenty-five before the hour. Oh, come on, you 30-somethings. You know you miss him. You know you miss him. Back to your phone calls. Kevin is calling from Brooklyn, New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fine. I want to bring up one quick point. How would you feel if Clinton and Obama were to unite and just do the president? Run instead of stopping this blood hemorrhaging that we Democrats are doing to ourselves.
That would be kind of crazy, wouldn't it? I mean, if one of them is bad, based on his or her record, based on all those things I said, and the other one is bad, based on his or her record and all those things I said, combining the two of them would give us, let me think a minute, double bad. Wouldn't it? I don't give a damn how much of a fight is going on between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I really don't. It doesn't mean a thing to me, except it's like watching pit bulls fight. And it's going to get worse over the next a couple of months until this thing is decided. And once it is decided, whoever the Democratic nominee happens to be, then it's going to become vile and filthy. Because then the Republican murder machine will turn its full power on whoever the Democratic nominee is. And the Democratic nominee will try to respond in kind, but Democrats are not capable for some reason of doing that. So as far as Clinton and Obama together, I think that's off the books, although if the two of them decide that their lust for power exceeds their interest in giving the United States what it needs right now, and that is effective leadership, then maybe that'll happen. But again, if it does happen, it's double bad.
I don't think it could be as bad as W or a W light.
Well, you know, that you can make that argument, but I can make as an effective an argument. Both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are smarter than George Bush by a factor of, oh, I don't know, 1,000. So if you have a half-witted idiot, George Bush, able to be manipulated into this kind of global destruction and economic chaos, imagine the destruction and the chaos that could be engineered by somebody who is smart. Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Kevin, I
hate to be a downer. I really do. But combining Obama and Clinton is just, I don't know, it makes my head spin.
All I have to say this, is surely at this point in our nation's history, we can aspire to something better than, well, they're not as bad as the worst president that's ever served ever in the history of America. Can we do a little bit better than,
no.
Well, they're not as bad as the worst guy that's ever been unelected in the office.
No, I don't think we can. Oh, and by the way, I got an email during the break from Irish Dave who points out that one of the reasons this attack inside Ecuador, you know, because it really got a revolutionary and a bad person who's been just pissing off the Colombians for a long time. Another reason, don't forget what the president of Ecuador said. The left wing, the left leaning, that's how the press in America identifies him, the leftist, left leaning president of Ecuador, you know, leftist, left, you know, like communist, you know, him. The president of Ecuador said a couple of months ago, I remember talking about this, that he would extend the American lease on the U.S. military base in Manta, if the United States would let Ecuador build a military base in, you know, Miami. In other words, the president of Ecuador is throwing the U.S. military out on its ass because there is no reason for the U.S. military to be in Ecuador. As there is no reason for the U.S. military to be in 99.8% of the countries in which the U.S. military finds itself as the result of the civilian leadership in this country that for the past 40 or 50 years has brutalized, bastardized, and destroyed the U.S. military. See Smedley Butler. And you'll understand what I just said. Look him up on Wikipedia. Smedley Butler. So since the president of Ecuador, the leftist, left-leaning communist president of Ecuador, who didn't like the fact that ExxonMobil came into, or Mobil, before it even combined with Exxon, that Mobil came into his country and through its process of indiscriminate drilling with zero regard for the environment has left a legacy in Ecuador, Mobil did this, that will pollute and destroy that country forever! The excess oil that was pumped into the ground water, into the environment by Texaco. I'm sorry, I said Mobil. Whatever. It was either Texaco or Mobil. I am drawing a blank. I'm having another senior moment. I'm sorry. It's hard to keep all this stuff straight. I think it was Mobil. No, Texaco. Oh, I don't care. But the U.S. oil company that went into Ecuador and began their exploratory drilling without permits, without environmental studies, and with no regard whatsoever to the people of Ecuador. And that's one of the reasons they now have a leftist or left-leaning president. because the rightist or right-leaning president allowed that to happen, among other atrocities. So when the president of Ecuador said to the U.S. military, if you want to continue your military base here, why, I don't know. Okay, we want to build one near Miami. Fair enough. So the orders went out to get the U.S. military out of Ecuador. And what is the response? Southern Command orchestrates, organizes, and carries out a military assault across an international boundary to kill a known, suspected, alleged terrorist who's been harassing the duly elected, chuckle, chuckle, snicker, snicker, right-wing government of Colombia. A warning to the government of Ecuador. So you want to build a military base in Miami, you smart asses? Is that what you said? Ha ha, here, eat hot lead. Pew, pew. You know, and the missiles start flying. So, let's not kid ourselves about any of this stuff, okay? Can we do that? Are we capable of not kidding ourselves? You know, I'm not saying go sit in a corner and suck your thumb and twist your hair and pull your blankie up over your head and turn out the lights. Hell no. Do you know what I'm saying on this program? Do you? Do you know why we get into this every night? Because I really do think there's a streak enough of us. Not the majority. The majority in this country is asleep or drugged. But there's a streak in enough of us that says no. Hell no. This is not going to happen. Not on my watch. This is not what I'm going to hand off to my kids or my grandkids. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to sit here silently and let this happen. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to write blogs. I'm going to go on the internet. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to listen to the right kind of radio that gives me some information. I'm going to talk. I'm going to resist. I'm going to tell my friends. I'm going to sit around when I have a cup of coffee. I'm going to talk to the people at the PTA, even if they roll their eyes. I'm going to talk to my friends in church, even if though they look at me as though I'm a communist. I am not going to sit here quietly and let this happen. That's why we talk about this stuff every night. In case you wondered.
I don't hear words saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze.
Out.
9 before the hour. That was just so good. Thanks to the crew who put the program together tonight. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence. And the executive producer of this program, Catherine Bay. Back to phone calls. Gabriel is calling from Hollywood, Florida, listening on WINZ. Gabriel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I know we're short on time. I'm doing pretty good. First, I want to tell you that I've been listening to you for years. I love your show. I agree with just about everything you say,
but
passionately. but I think you made a mistake this time. I'm Colombian. I was born in the United States, though. I was born in New York. My wife's from Colombia. We have a what we call a finca, which is like a farm over there
right.
on the mountains.
Right.
And generally, the guerrilla has destroyed that country for the last 40 years.
Now, wait. I'm more than willing to give you all the time
okay.
you want, but let's go slowly.
Okay.
What do you mean by guerrilla?
Well, they're called La Guerrilla, and what it is
right.
is it's a group of they're like soldiers, and they live in the mountains.
No. I understand the term guerrilla. What
okay.
are they interested in?
Well, they may have started out like a communist group that felt that they were treated unfairly, that the right wing, like you say, the right wing government
okay.
was not responding to their needs, and sort of like it happens everywhere, like here even the poor here, we're not getting
okay,
our share.
Okay, let me make sure I'm understanding you. They started out as a group of people who were being mistreated by the right wing governments.
Well, sort of like here in this country,
Colombia.
The people are being mistreated here that don't have health care.
I don't think that's a good analogy.
Well,
maybe in a country where there is an active insurgent or guerrilla movement, but we don't have that here. So you can't.
Absolutely, we don't. Thank God.
Right.
And the problem is, if we did have that there, we would put up.
No, wait.
With
we're getting way off track. So these people started out as freedom fighters.
You want to call them that?
Well, no. I'm asking
you.
You're from Colombia, or your wife is from Colombia, and you are Colombian.
Yeah.
I'm just look. I, like I said, I'm willing to give you all the time you want, but let's be careful as we go along here because it's very easy to sink into rhetoric. Now, I get the impression. Correct me if I'm wrong. That you're saying that this group FARC started out as freedom fighters.
If you want to call them that.
No. Please don't do that to me. What do you call them? You said
I'm using
your rhetoric. You said
you said
they were fighting for freedom. They were suppressed by the right wing governments. So all I'm saying is
so you're calling them
freedom fighters. That's a question,
fine,
not a statement.
Fine. Okay, they're freedom fighters.
Okay, that's
fine.
How they started.
Fine. Okay. They're,
now
they're
go ahead. Go ahead.
Communists always feel like they're...
Well, now, wait a minute. Who said they were communist?
Okay, look. Forget I even said it, because I don't want to waste my time on that point.
No. This is a very important point, Gabriel. Were they...
communist.
No, wait, Gabriel. Were they communist?
Pardon me?
Were they communist?
They're socialist, communist...
Oh, okay. Well, no, there's a difference.
Time.
There's a big difference, Gabriel.
I have
please, for Christ's sake, be able to make your argument coherently. What were they, these freedom fighters?
Why are you leaving all the questions? I just wanted to make a point.
No, of course you don't want questions.
But they are. I don't care what they are.
But Gabriel, if you don't care what they are, what kind of a point are you going to make?
You said you were going to let me talk. Now, please let me talk.
But only if you took it a step at it.
Oh,
Jesus.
I just have to answer your questions or I can't talk.
Go ahead.
Okay, let me just finish my point, please. Again, I love your show. I agree with you about Ecuador, that the United States is in there. It's terrible. I read all the books you recommended, Rogue State, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I understand. I agree with everything you pretty much say. Now, most of the people over there, they're for Uribe, about 80% of the people. That is a fact. I go there every year. My wife goes there every year. We have family there. We're not wealthy. But the people are sick of these people. You cannot have anything. You can't have a nice car. You can't have jewelry because they will kidnap you, take you into the woods, and that's what they do. They may have started off like a group of people that wanted something good for their country, but that's no longer the case. They deal in drugs now, and Ecuador lets them go into their country, and the guy that they killed has been one of the main guys for many, many years. He's not some guy that just was invented by the U.S. You have it all wrong, Mike. You need to understand this. You're dead wrong on this issue. Mike?
Yes.
Okay, are you listening?
Of course I am.
Okay.
So building on what you were saying, may I jump
sure,
in here? Because we only have a few less than a minute left.
Building
on what you're saying, then it would be not impossible to extrapolate and say that the Palestinians are also just a pain in the ass of the state of Israel.
No, that's a different issue, Mike.
But isn't it close to the same?
No, this is a very small group of the Colombian population that are doing this. Can you imagine if we had our country, you had people that a group of
okay, well, let me ask you this, Gabriel. If I may ask you one question, Gabriel.
Go ahead.
This is a 40-year-long insurrection. If it is just supported by a smaller group of people, why has the Colombian military not been able to eliminate it? That's A, and B would be, why was it necessary to institute something called Plan Colombia? Now, we're out of time, Gabriel, but if you call me back tomorrow, I'll put you on so you can answer those questions. Thanks for participating. However you did that tonight, I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.